Hello, it's time to get ready for the Conservationists Assembled podcast, where we team up with the planet's mightiest defenders to learn about the diverse species and landscapes that make our world so amazing. Today's episode is all about the southern cheetah, and we've got a special guest who's an expert on the fastest mammal on the planet. Let's give a warm welcome to Lars Versteeg. Lars, thank you for joining us today on the podcast. How's it going?
It's going really well. As you can tell, I'm not English. I've got a special accent. I'm Dutch. But as, 90% of my work is international anyway, so my English is pretty fluent, but of course I can't disguise my accent. So apologies for that.
No, definitely not. Conservation is a global effort, and I'm glad we're reaching out to international guests to come on. So we're thrilled to be discussing the southern cheetah with you, and can't wait to hear your thoughts. So can you tell us about the southern cheetah, please?
Yeah, well, for many people who are familiar with wildlife, cheetah is a special cat species, taxonomically, because they are very distinct from other cats. So that means that evolutionary, they went their own way a long time before other cat species did. So evolutionary, they're quite distinct. They've got a very distinct lifestyle, let's say it like that. As you may know, they completely adjusted to hunting speed. Majority of cat species hunt by ambush. A cheetah fully relies on speed. They let go of other cat traits, for example, muscle, for example, retractable claws. So evolutionary, they adjusted their lives completely to speed, which makes this species very, very special. So it's a unique cat species, which is unfortunately, as many species, under threat.
Yeah. And what role then do southern cheetah play within their wider ecosystem?
Well, it's still a big carnivore. Of course, if you compare them with the other large carnivores in Africa, for example, lion, leopard, hyena, well, they're not on top of the food chain, let's say it like that. They are, carnivore-wise, not a big boss. They need to be careful. Mm-hmm. Actually, they're being hunted by other big carnivores. Other big carnivores rather see a cheetah dead than alive. So what happens in nature is that a cheetah needs to be very careful of its surroundings, because there might be a competitive hunter in the neighborhood. And a cheetah is always on the bottom of the food chain, if you can say it like that, because they're the weakest. They have their speed, and that's the only advantage that they have. For the rest, they haven't got much to go on, let's say it like that. So they have to be careful. And there's a lot of competition also for food. So, yeah, they are a big carnivore, but they still are very susceptible as carnivore. And that's something also unique. And not many carnivores which are really susceptible for predation. And cheetah is, because when a lion catches a cheetah or cubs, especially cubs, they will kill them straight away.
And so going back to part in the first point where you say, obviously, as like a lot of other animals on the planet, cheetahs are threatened and facing a risk of extinction. What are the classifications to cheetah and kind of what are the population trends for them?
Well, the classification so far, because cheetah are seen as one species, which is taxonomically debatable, because you have also the northern clade, let's say it like that. So northern Africa, there's also cheetah, which are genetically a little bit distinct. But the discussion is still ongoing whether it's different species or subspecies. It doesn't matter, but it does matter for conservation status. So, for example, the cheetah as a species is vulnerable. The cheetah population as a whole is going down. It's got 6,500 individuals left, but it's going down. But if you look at the populations, it's far more endangered than the vulnerable status ICN says. Because if we look at the northern clade. It's very, very endangered. The Asian cheetah is almost extinct. So it depends on the southern cheetah, Namibia, South Africa, southern clade, which is a little bit more safe in numbers.
Hmm.
But still, they are suffering from the same threats as their cousins. There's a lot of international trade going on. There's a lot of people-animal conflict in the neighborhoods. So there's a lot of dangers for this species to go extinct.
And are there then any in-situ projects that zoos partner up with or support to help try and prevent those populations from disappearing forever?
Yeah, of course. The organization that many people know is CCF, so the Cheetah Conservation Fund. They are based in Namibia, but they're based in other countries as well. So it's a coalition of conservation partners which try to do whatever they can to avoid the cheetah for extinction. So one thing they for example do is have conversations with local farmers. Another thing they do is they breed protective dogs. So, for example, they breed shepherd dogs, which are then trained to protect herds. And because of the presence of those shepherd dogs, cheetahs don't dare to attack cattle or livestock, which means that there's less conflict and less prone farmers to take revenge on the cheetah by shooting it. So that's one of the initiatives that CCF is doing by providing these shepherd dogs to farmers, that they actually protect the population of cheetah because less cheetah will get shot by the local farmers. So there's a lot of initiatives going on. There's also a lot of breeders in Africa which breed species in their reserves, which is a very good initiative, but it's also tricky because of inbreeding rate, because there's less dispersal of the species, because the species is the safest in conservation areas, so fenced areas, which means they cannot go out, which means that you're dependent on intensive management. And intensive management means that you look at the bloodlines, you look at which animals are breeding with which, and when do I need to start exchanging animals? Actually, what we do as zoos. And this is something relatively new in Africa. In Africa, everybody thinks Africa, oh, yeah, that's nature, that's wildlife. No, it's not. It's all fenced in. It's all semi-wild. So it's not wild anymore because they're fenced in. And that means that if you're fenced in, if you prevent animals from natural dispersal, it means that you need to manage them yourself, because you prevent animals from natural dispersal. Young animals which would naturally roam out the territory of their mothers and find a territory of their own, you're preventing that because there's a fence around it. So that means that you need to be the dispersal. You need to make sure that at the right age, related animals get dispersed to other regions. And that's something that in zoos we've done in the last 25, 30, 35 years, which means that we have a very genetically very diverse population of cheetah, because every year or twice a year, I make recommendations for the whole population. Now, population in Europe is about 300 animals. And I make sure that each individual of those 300 gets a recommendation. And it might be a non-breeding recommendation, hold as display because of its age. And cheetahs, usually female cheetah above 10 years old, don't conceive anymore. So it doesn't make sense to give them a breeding recommendation because it won't happen anyway. So that's the biology of the species. Males can go a little bit longer, so you can give a male cheetah of 11 still a breeding recommendation to breed with a younger female, whatever. So that's feasible. But usually females after 10-ish, it's not likely they will conceive any longer. So this is intensive management.
Great. And so, yeah, thank you for kind of diving into the purpose and function of the EEP then. What actions need to happen to help improve the chances of survival for the southern cheetah?
Yeah, there are different actions that need to be taken. Let's start with the most difficult one. The action that everyone wants to avoid. Every person that is speak of never dares to touch that subject. And that's overpopulation, human overpopulation. We need to control human overpopulation. If we do not control overpopulation of humans, then all nature it does not have a chance. It doesn't stand a chance because people want to live. People take up more and more space. People take up more and more welfare. They buy their cars. They go everywhere. Everything is being destroyed. If there's no space left for wildlife, then all wildlife is doomed. So if there is at least a chance for wildlife to survive, then population growth must stop, must come to an end. There's no way this earth can house so many billion people. It's impossible. Natural resources are just going out. We're going out of habitats is lost. We're so destructive. We need everything. So we need soda oil for our food. So, okay, wow, whole rainforests are being destroyed for soda plantations. And more of those examples. We need beef for our protein. So the whole Amazon is being cut down to have pastures for cattle, for beef. We're so destructive. People are so destructive. And it won't change with a simple change of life. We're just too far. So it sounds very pessimistic, but that's the way I see it. And there needs to be radical changes. And I fear that the majority of people are not able or willing to make those sacrifices.
I think that moves nicely into the next point in terms of what everybody can do to get involved with cheetah conservation, even if they aren't directly involved with them. So what could our listeners do specifically to maybe help with the chance of survival of a cheetah?
Yeah, well, one of the difficulties with conservation is that the majority of the people which actually can care about conservation, because they're rich enough, they're located in the Western world where most of the wildlife is not. So we as Europeans, well, we have a big mouth. We've destroyed our own nature, and now we have a big mouth about Africans destroying theirs. You know, it's very arrogant, and that's let's not go too into that. But how can we help as Europeans? Well, just basically think about your life, think about your footprint, your ecological footprint. Think about, do I need to drive to work every day, or can I also take a bicycle? Do I need to fly to, well, what's a Portugal? What in Portugal is a place that many of the Brits go to? I don't remember. But do we need to go there twice or three times a year? Fly to Portugal for our summer holidays, that sort of thing. So, think about your footprint. Think about the food you're consuming. Is that the food that we need? Do we need to eat strawberries in wintertime? Do we need to eat all kinds of special projects which are being imported from far, far away? Do we need that in the wintertime? Or can we be satisfied with our local products, with the local farming? Or can we be satisfied with not having protein every day? Or can we look at mushrooms? Or can we look at the diversity of nuts or whatever? So it's your own ecological footprint. Now, I'm not by favor someone who says meat is bad. It's not, but scientifically, it is a fact that protein, in this regard, is a very expensive source. Protein is by far a more expensive source than, for example, mushrooms or whatever. And because, and then I go back to overpopulation, because there are too many people wanting protein, that's where it goes wrong. If that weren't that over consuming of 7 billion or 8 billion people, whatever, on protein, then we wouldn't have so many issues. So we wouldn't have that issue of the carbon emission or whatever. There's so many problems all caused basically the disease overpopulation. But the disease is not being tackled. No, it's all the symptoms which are in the open, which we are trying to tackle. But you know, you can tackle a symptom. If you don't cure the disease, the symptoms won't go away. That's how I see it.
And then, so what, aside from the EEP and maintaining that genetic diversity, what other resources or work do public and zoo donations fund?
So one thing that we fund, of course, is battle the illegal market, battle the trade. That's another big concern that we have with this species. Cheetah is a species which is naturally traded as a pet on the black market. Especially in Somaliland, it happens daily, where there's confiscations of cheetah cubs. Now, cheetah cubs are being harvested from anywhere and being sold as pets on the black market. Now, a cheetah, if you raise a cheetah cub, they can become relatively domesticated. I won't say fully domesticated because it will remain a big predator. And unfortunately, they are very popular in some areas, especially the Arab area. It's still very popular species to have as a pet. So there's a lot of illegal trade with the species. That's why it's also CITES I listed. CITES is a trade, is a trade legislation. So without CITES papers, you're not allowed to keep the species. You're not allowed to do anything with the species. But well, as you know, with legislation, it is always difficult. So there's a lot of confiscations of these motherless young cheetah, which are being well, often in Somaliland, because apparently that's a part in Africa which is prone to wildlife trade, let's say it like that. So it's apparently a good market and also a good trade to receiving countries. So there's apparently they've managed to find the best locations. And animal trade, let's not forget, animal trade is still, it's one of the highest criminal sectors in the world. I believe that after the drug sector, the illegal animal trade sector is the highest if we look at profitable. So there's a lot of illegal activity going on. And it doesn't help, of course, that whole of Africa is being locked off for roads. So areas where there would never be any people because it's in the middle of the bush, now suddenly cars can go there because of roads. There's a lot of roads being made. So the whole African country is being penetrated by roads. So whenever there's road, there's illegal activity. Whether it's logging, illegal logging, whether it's bushmeat trade, whether it's illegal wildlife trade, it doesn't matter. Whenever there is activity with traffic, there's legal trade.
So now to kind of switch track and just learn about what drew you to get involved with the Cheetah EEP or where your particular fondness for cheetah originated from.
My particular fondness for cheetah is a special species. It's not a big five species, you know? Everybody goes to Africa, they want to see the big fives, they want to see leopards, they want to see lions, rhino, buffalo, elephants. I think cheetah is far more special. Even more if I look at their lifestyle, that they always have to be careful. They cannot relax. They have to be careful. They have to be careful for big prey animals, because they are what, 40-45 kilos. You know, if there's a wildebeest and a wildebeest goes mad, they can kill a cheetah. So they have to be careful for prey animals, but they also have to be careful for hyena. They have to be careful for leopard. They have to be careful for lions. So there are so many other species for which a cheetah needs to be careful. So they have a very rough life, and that makes them so interesting to look at. Their specialized way of only being dependent on their speed. And it's amazing. It's amazing if you see how young cheetah learn to hunt. It's a learned process, and how often they fail, and that their mother actually lets them fail and lets the prey animal escape just to teach them. So it's an amazing species. And it's a shame that they're so susceptible to habitat changes, because they depend on their speed. If their habitat changes, so there's no more camouflation, how on earth are they going to get close enough to a herd of springbok or impala or whatever? How on earth are they going to get close enough if there's no more camouflage, if there's no vegetation to hide behind, so that they can come closer, and last 100 meters they sprint? They are dependent on that. And that's a shame that they're so, their habitat changes so much that it's influencing the species so much. And that's a shame to see.
Yeah, 100% agree. So we're going to move away from cheetah now. We're just going to talk a little bit about your career and your background, and hopefully, you know, provide some insight as to what it takes to be working within ex situ conservation. So, yeah, could you tell us about your background and your journey to where you are in your career today?
Yeah, so basically my background is as a 17-year-old starting in the zoo in the weekends and the holidays. That's basically how I started, how I got involved with zoo animals, is by just applying for a weekend job. And I was lucky to get it. And that's how basically I got into this field of work, because I didn't know as a 17-year-old what I wanted to do. We've always had pet animals, and we've had loads of animals outside as well. So that was an interest, but I didn't realize at that time that this would be my career. But as a 17-year-old boy, I just got fascinated with it. And I remained working in that zoo for about 8-9 years during college and university. So that basically, so I studied animal keeping college, and then I went to animal management university. And during that time, I stayed on as a part-time keeper there. I was convinced that I wanted to have a higher position. For that, also, I did foreign internships in zoological collections which were world famous. So, for example, San Diego. So I did an internship in San Diego. I did an internship in New York in the Bronx. I did an internship in Sydney, Toronto Zoo. So by those international internships, I gained more perspective on international cooperation. And that's probably the reason why I'm so convinced that international cooperation is the only way forward. We have no choice. We have only each other. And that means we as zoos, but also the in situ world, so the conservation organization. So there's no other way to do it. We need to have a one plan approach. We need all conservation parties, whether ex situ or in situ, doesn't matter where we are, we need to work together to avoid mass extinction. That's the only way. And I don't care what the welfare organizations say about wildlife in captivity, whatever, they have no clue. They have no clue how ambitious we are, how good we are for our animals, and what we do for species conservation. We're so dedicated to species conservation, and it's really hurtful to see the comments of the supposed animal welfare people saying, animals shouldn't be in captivity. You should be in the wild. People, there's no wild left. Be realistic. Our animals are in a 4-star hotel. We take care of them like princes with golden blankets. They couldn't have a better life. Yeah, it's in captivity, but better in captivity than poached or used as bushmeat or being traded to a rich sheik as a pet. No, there is no wild left. Wake up. Animal welfare people, they have no clue. And they keep on barging zoological collections because we keep animals in captivity. Well, be happy that we do. Maybe we'll save a few of them.
And aside, obviously, you've mentioned how cheetahs have inspired you or what they mean to you, but are there any other individual animals or species that you kind of have a particular fondness for?
Well, yeah, next to the Assam cheetah EP population, I also manage white rhino. So I'm also the coordinator of the white rhino EP. Now, talking about a species which is in peril because of illegal activity. 500, 600, 700 a year being shot because of their horn made of keratin. You know, the same material that we have on Ailsa. It doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. Why on earth 600 white rhino to be shot in Africa, especially now KwaZulu-Natal, South Africa, KwaZulu-Natal is being hit severely by poaching. It used to be Kruger. Now, majority of the Kruger rhino are in our areas, so they shift to another area. So now KwaZulu-Natal is being hit. So we're down to 16,000 white rhino worldwide. Now, white rhino are sitting ducks because it's a savanna species, just like cheetah. They're a savanna species, so it's more easily to target than, for example, leopard or the cousin of white rhino, the black rhino. Far more difficult to hunt because they're always in the bush. A leopard, well, people who've been in Africa know how difficult it is to spot a leopard. So, you know, also, again, an example of a species which is a savanna species, like the cheetah, is savanna adapted. So a huge ecological meaning for the whole area of conservation there. And also being hunted because of illegal activity. So yeah, it seems that my life work is around to do with combating illegal wildlife trade. Yeah.
What is the favorite part of your role?
The favorite part is now, for example, when I started with taking on the role as coordinator for both species, actually, so cheetah as well as white rhino. The population in Europe in the EPs were not sustainable. And that means that you do not have enough births to counter the deaths. No. So that's basically, in a nutshell, the first thing you need to do in a population, you need to make sure that you have a sustainable population. For that, you need to have enough births. If you have a sustainable population, then you can look at genetics. Then you can say, okay, so we've had more than enough births to counteract the death. We don't grow fast enough to have a problem with surplus, which is another issue, of course. Don't grow too fast. So, okay, we're sustainable. And then we're going to look at the genetics because some bloodlines have dispersed much farther than other bloodlines. And you need to counteract that. So as a coordinator, you're always looking then at what we say mean kinship. And mean kinship means how far is your genetic footprint embedded in the population. Now, if you have a lot of cousins, sisters, brothers, whatever, then you have a very high mean kinship. And that means that you're genetically less important to breed from. But, for example, you do have some brothers, but they have never reproduced themselves. It means that you're the single survivor of a single bloodline. Then absolutely, you need to breed and breed as much as possible. So those are the genetical details that we as population managers then have to work with. And that's very interesting to see if that finally works. Yes, for me personally, it's a I get a kick out of seeing how the population develops, seeing how the white rhino EEP population, we grew from 250 animals to 380 in the last 18 years because we started breeding. We started switching. We started sending out daughters when they're about 3 years old away from their mother. So their mothers would go back into cycle and the daughters in a few years would start cycling again. So we went from a population which was not so sustainable to a very healthy, very well-breeding population. And that's something that we can say that's definitely a success of both populations, success of what tight management can do for a population. If you start managing a population and to detail what it can achieve. And that's something that I'm really proud of.
That's fair enough. So we're going to finish up with just a few quick fire questions just to learn a little bit more about what makes you happy or kind of what in with regards to conservation and our planet you enjoy most. So are there 1 to 5 dream species that you'd love to see in the wild?
Yeah, of course. I've got my bucket list. Yeah, of course. One of the bucket list species is to be able to scuba dive with whale sharks and manta rays. So there's a place in the Maldives, which is for diving in the right season, and that's of course amazing to do. So same as going to Uganda to see wild chimpanzees and mountain gorillas, which is also a very popular thing to do as a tourist. That actually makes me feel, maybe I shouldn't, because it's such a popular thing to do. So it's now less interesting for me, but well, it doesn't matter. It would be an amazing experience to see chimpanzees and mountain gorillas for sure. Yeah, you know, the Pantanal, South America, you know, hearing macaws going over or you know, seeing jaguars or seeing giant otter, another elusive species, which is just amazing, giant otter. So there are so many, if you love nature, then there are so many places you actually would love to visit, but, you know?
Definitely.
It's not realistic. It's not realistic.
Yeah. If you could be an animal, what would it be and why?
That's a difficult one. Maybe I'd be an ant. Because if an ant can show us one thing, is that together they are strong. Together they need to do everything together, because otherwise they won't survive. And this is something that we as humans should learn. We should always be working together on everything, because otherwise it's useless. And this is something that's a life lesson which still many people don't understand. So maybe an ant would be the best answer.
That's great. And with that, you have answered my last question. So thank you so much, Vlas, for coming on the podcast and sharing your knowledge and your experience and views on conservation. We'll be sure to keep in touch and keep up with your career and everything that's going on with cheetahs and rhinos. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. And I hope, something new will come out. At this moment, there's a global cheetah summit taking place in Ethiopia. So many of the cheetah experts are actually in Ethiopia at the moment, discussing measures need to be taken. Unfortunately, I couldn't be there. But I hope something fruitful will come out of that meeting. As I said, most of the cheetah partners are there at the moment. So let's hope that there's going to be some very good updates in the coming weeks, months after.
That's all from the Conservation Assembled podcast this week. Thank you millions for tuning in. Follow the podcast on Instagram and Facebook at Conservationist Assembled Pod to stay connected to the latest updates. And hey, if you found this episode as enjoyable as I did, be sure to like, share and leave a 5-star review. This helps us spread the word and bring more conservation heroes with their fascinating stories. Thanks, and catch you all next time.